It's a violent burn.
I'd like to talk about the old dances for sure.
Well, I can tell you one that's kind of funny. This fellow, he works for us, and he said he'd take his girl to the dance. It was 12 miles to the dance hall, and they didn't have two saddle horses, so they got a big old workhorse. You couldn't put a saddle on him, and they rode double, and this girl behind him hanging on, and they galloped to this dance, and just as they got to the dance and stepped in, you know, they had what they call was a floor manager. Well, a couple had ragged. You've heard of the dance, the rag? It's an old-time dance, you know. Of course, it wasn't very, now it would be very modest, but then the ragging was, you know, wasn't a very decent dance. But of course, so just as he got into the door, the floor manager stopped the dance. And he and his girl got on their big old workhorse and rode back.
And they had to close that dance?
Yeah, well, he closed it. See, he was the last word. What he said, why, and they caught this couple ragging, as they called it. And then another one always amused me. They had a dance out here at Harney years ago. And before they'd have these dances, they'd have big oyster feeds. They'd have, if you can imagine, oysters. So they all got there to the dance, and they were eating their oysters and their soup. There's one woman upset the plate in her lap. And, of course, she was humiliated, and she cried, and the women took her into the room and tried to soothe her and get her to quit crying. But she cried all night, so there was no dance. And they broke up the dance. Well, it's so funny to me because now, if anybody spilled oyster soup, they'd wipe it off and say, what the heck? And then we used to go to a dance in Diamond years ago, and we had a Scotch herder that worked for us. And then music was kind of difficult to get. And this Scotch herder could only play one tune, Near My God to Thee. But he could play it waltz time, and he could play it fast, and he could play it tango if you wanted. So all night long, we danced to Near My God to Thee in the different, almost like the Titanic. And then there was another fellow that he could play the accordion a little bit. He knew several tunes, but he liked Golden Slippers. And he said if you found one tune in your life you liked, why worry about any others? So he played Golden Slippers all night. And then this was a, they used to have dances up above a shop. And they had a darned old rickety stairs. It was almost like a ladder. And they'd go up there and, of course, dance all night, but the One rancher would come with his wife, and he would get drunk, and then he'd want to leave. They'd get in a fight, and she'd cry, and he'd threaten to leave, and she'd follow him to the top of these stairs, and then just as he'd say, well, I'm going, and he'd start down the stairs, but he always managed to reach out and grab her, and down they both went. And every time they'd have a dance, they'd say, well, did so-and-so, yeah, they went down the stairs. They hit the top and down they went. And, you know, I can't understand why it didn't kill him. It was a cement floor on the bottom. But he always managed to grab her before he left. Well, they are kind of, aren't they kind of funny dances to think of them? And I suppose I know a lot more, but it's kind of hard to remember all the, I just remember the ones that are kind of funny, I guess. That's my...
Those dances must have been a lot of fun.
Yes, they were. They were a lot of fun, and of course they dance, start in early and dance all night, unless the floor manager stop the dance, which you could always do.
How did you like living in the Steens area down there?
Well, of course I loved it. We lived there, we had sheep, and we lived there in the summertime. And we'd be on the ranch in the wintertime, and then it was just strictly summer. And we'd have the main camp, and then the camp tender would work out from there, and the herders, and at one time there were lots of sheep on Steens Mountain. There was one place where you could stand up on the top, and in there, about 4 o'clock, when the sheep would leave the bedground to feed, you could see 35 ducks of the different bands. And now there is one band on Steens Mountain. And of course we had lots of bass. They came through with their sheep. And some of them lived here, had sheep. Some, you know, eat the trails as they come up and they fatten their lambs. They work to the Steens and then work back down. And they were nice neighbors, and they're a very colorful race. And they say that the Steens Mountain is very much like the Spanish Pyrenees. And I have seen, I noticed, I watched in when they had For Whom the Bells Toll, and it is very similar. It's kind of a desert mountain with lots of rocks, and of course I think they maybe have more caves than we do. They have lots of caves, and they seem to like the Steens.
Did you grow up in the Steens?
No, I didn't. I did. My husband, though, he was born at a place they call Cord. It was just as you go, like you go to Folly Farm, you know, out from there. His folks lived there, and then his father ran his sheep on the Steens. And of course, he'd been raised there as a boy and a child, and spent his lifetime there.
But you came from outside here.
Yes, I did. It was all new to me.
Mm. How did you find it at first?
Well, of course, I didn't know much about it at first, and I'd never been on a ranch, but you learn. It's a nice life.
Yeah.
In the schoolhouse there in Diamond, Glenn's, now this is kind of interesting, Glenn's mother went there. They came in the days her folks settled, in the days of Peter French, and at the Seward Cabin, that's on the west side of Steens Farm. And she went to the schoolhouse, and Glenn, my husband, went there, and my daughter went there, and my grandson went there. It's kind of interesting to think that the four would go to this little country school. And of course his mother must have gone in the 80s. Must have been, I think they came here in 1884.
Did they come from the Midwest?
No, they came from Missouri. So many people came from Missouri. I said, so few people come here. The people in Indiana must have been satisfied, because I've only known one person from Indiana, but the people from Missouri, or maybe it was I don't know, wonder why, do you know why? Don't you find that when you're questioning these pioneers, that so many of them are from Missouri? Have you ever questioned anyone from Indiana?
No.
No, I knew this one, the rancher, who was from Indiana, and he used to talk about Indiana. I used to like to listen to him because I knew so, you know, he was the only one I ever knew, and I've never known anybody since. I never hear about, but we had quite a few from Kentucky came in. They were pretty rugged individuals, and Missouri, Nebraska. Lots of people came in from Nebraska.
Who were some of your neighbors in the west part of the state?
Well, we always had the company, you know, the company ranch. They ran their cattle and sheep up there.
Well, I didn't know they had any sheep.
Yeah, they run sheep, uh-huh. When Joe Fine was manager there, they run in there. And the Jenkinses didn't run with us. They were over on the other side. And there were several small outfits. Well, they, you know, kind of little, the Basque, Joe Channis and P.D. Barr and Joe LaCerica, they ran in there with us, they neighbored with us.
Did they bring over their wives after they'd settled, or they married?
Well, so some of those I mentioned were single, but single except Joe Channis, and he married a Basque girl in his country. But most of them came here were single. And I don't know, they married women in this country, not Johnny Barr. He married a woman. She came from Spain, of course, but he married her here. I don't know many of the herders that, or the sheepmen that married in Spain. Of course, I imagine the older ones did. Maybe they went back and got a wife. Have you ever interviewed any of the Basque people? Maybe it'd be good to interview.
That's a really lonely life, isn't it? That herding sheep.
Well, yes it is. They read a lot, as a rule. I think it'd be a very lonely life to someone that didn't read, and we have had herders that couldn't read. But most of them, you will never see a herder. You'll usually have a book or a magazine stuck in his coat pocket. And they always want the mail, and they want to read. The Basque, they were good neighbors, and they bought some of their cooking secrets, I think, with them. They were good cooks, they were clean, and before he'd start to make his bread, he'd roll up his sleeves and scrub his hands and take out his pocket knife and clean his fingernails. And they made famous, the Basque in this country, what they called a big bread. Have you heard of it? Well, they called it big bread, and then they called it jackass bread. And for the simple reason, this herder would leave the main camp, and he'd take his burrow, and he'd pack his bed, and enough supplies for a week. And then he would leave, and then he'd take his sheep, and that way he'd be on fresh feed all the time, see? He wouldn't camp in the same place. Well, they would have to make bed for this herder. And you'd hear one Basque say to another, how many does he take? Oh, he takes 2 tens and 1 12. Oh, my man, he takes 3 tens and 12. Well, it would mean the size of the Dutch oven. They come in tens and 12s, and that's the size of the bread, because they bake it just Dutch oven. Well, they take it and they make a kind of a raised dough, like a sourdough. And he digs a hole in the ground. And he builds a fire in this hole. And he gets a good bed of coals. And then he works his bread, as I say, he's very clean about it. And then he puts it in this Dutch oven and lets it raise a little bit. And then he puts it in, he takes these ashes, some of these coals out, and puts his bread in there, and then puts the coals on top of the Dutch oven. And the Dutch oven has a rim on it like that, see, for these coals. And he puts it, then he covers that all with dirt. And that's the way he bakes his what he calls his big bread. And then when it comes out of there, it's just, it has a real thick brown crust on it, and it's just really delicious. And you go to his camp, and he offers you, they have always had wine, always, lots of wine, and he offers you a glass of wine. And he takes his big bread like this, and holds it up against his greasy shirt, and takes a knife and cuts you off a slice. That's the way they cut it. They hold it against this way, just like they do in the old country.
They make stew in that pot too, I bet.
Oh yes, and the camp tenders in the main camp, or the herders in the main camp. We used to do it too. We used to make big bread, and he'll take and whatever he has, his meat, and he'll put it in there, and his vegetables, just like the bread, bury it. Then when he comes back in the evening, like his meal's cooked.
How could he get his carrots and his all to cook up right?
Well, they will. They won't burn either if you don't let any air to it. If you're careful to close out all the air, you know. And they cook the beans that way. And it's really a wonderful way to cook.
A lot of Irish came sheep herders, too.
Yeah, the Irish, but he wasn't the cook that the Bass was, and he wasn't as clean as the Bass. The Basque, as I said, he was very colorful. You know, he was pretty smart. One Basque says to another, one said to another herder, "How big's your check?" He said, "Oh, it's about 5 inches long and about 3 inches wide." That's the way they'd always come up with something like that, you know. Real good sense of humor. And pretty, he didn't intend to tell him how much his biggest check was either. Don't worry, he just...
Pretty close mouth,
and that was a way of answering him. Mm-hmm. And they always would come up with answers like that, you know. And it was always... Mm-hmm. And then we had a Greek outfit on the mountain. I run in there for several years, and they ran on our range. And they're a different outfit altogether, the Greek. And they had one herd that was a ballet dancer. And that always, I couldn't get over that. And he, I can see him now. He would come, he'd just ride a horse, just full blast, with a hat turned up in front, you know, and... he didn't speak any English, so of course we didn't get to know him very well. But they said he was a ballet dancer. And of course you meet them and all, you know, just to say that a herder, you know, a lot of them are well educated. We had one that they called him Johnny Bull. He was an Englishman, and we had several Welshmen and Scotchmen, and Johnny Bull, he was one of the greatest readers. And talk about your up on his English and his history of England, and you know, he could just answer any question that you'd ask him, you know. He was just right up on everything. And as you say, of course, you know, they would herd, and then they'd get off, and they'd get on this big drunk. Some would spend every cent they had in a week, come back broke. And Johnny Bull was with that kind. The Scots, of course, they saved their money a little better. Of course, the Basque, he saved his money, and usually you'd be working for him. So many years.
It wouldn't take too long.
No, it wouldn't take too long. But it was And they had quite a few Welshmen. Now, Tony Jenkins was Welsh, you know. And they brought in several Welshmen. It's these pioneers that came in, and then they'd bring in distant relatives or cousins or something, and that way we had a Welsh, some Welsh boys that were with us for years. And one Welsh boy was with Glenn's father and worked until he retired, and he worked for us for years and years. And they were good.
Whatever happened to most of these fellows?
Whatever happened to most of them?
Yeah, after they got to the end of the time when they were working.
Well, it seemed to me like most of them died of heart attacks. I don't know. Well, I don't know. I know several did. Just one Welsh boy that worked for us for 3 years. He had a heart attack and died. And Johnny Bull had a heart attack. Johnny Bull had a heart attack, and there's been several of the bass, too. I don't know, maybe it's the sheep dust and the working. I used to think maybe it was that my husband had a heart attack, and he died. And I wondered if sometime working the sheep in the crowd and the dust, and as much dust as there is of following a bunch of sheep, and working with them in the crowds and all. Sometimes, you know, you just couldn't see a thing, the dust would be so thick. But maybe that's just my idea. I don't know. There's something about Glenn's brother died of a heart attack. It's, first the mountain is high, and it's 7,000 feet. One bass, Pete Gray, he died of a heart attack, and he told us, he said that there was a coyote working in his sheep, and his dogs took in after it. And his dogs would catch the coyotes and hold it. And he'd run, and he was up there on top. And he was up pretty high. He must have been up 8,500 or something like that. He wasn't clear to the top, but he was pretty high where he ranged from there. And he'd just almost get there, and then the coyote would bite the dogs and they'd let loose and they'd run, and then the dogs would run again and he'd run. And he told Glenn, he said, you know, that just something happened. I just felt like I burst my heart or something. And he was never well after that. Maybe